I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, January 30th, 2021, and this is episode 105 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. Today's episode is sponsored by Driven by Rebecca Zanetti, the latest heart-pumping romantic suspense novel featuring operatives in a secretive Homeland Defense Department. Angus Force is determined to hunt down the serial killer he thought he'd already shot dead. But when the killer targets Nari Zhang, the shrink for the ragtag Deep Ops Unit, the two misfit operatives are thrown together. In addition to bringing down a diabolical murderer, they'll have to fight to keep the heat between them from flaming out of control. Don't miss this mix of high-octane action with even more intense romantic tension. Driven by Rebecca Zanetti is available now wherever books are sold and at kensingtonbooks.com. So this week's best thing is I know what my next project is going to be. So I have agreed to do a new project, and it is exciting and a little bit scary because it's different for me. It is another historically based novel, and so I'm currently working on my work in progress right now, which is my 1920s fantasy heist. I think we will call this one the 1830s magical mystery. And it's sort of like a detective kind of thing. It's a lot more things than that, but that's going to be the code word so we can distinguish the projects. They actually both do have names, but once things are announced and I can talk about actual titles or if I know what, titles tend to change anyway, but I'm hopeful that they both can keep the titles because I think they're both really cool. So where we stand with the 1920s fantasy heist is I should check the word count. I'm getting really close to the midpoint. This week I'll be writing the midpoint chapters and things are moving along again. I cut another scene this week, which kept me on track. I had redone the entire schedule after getting kind of behind. And then, then I was like, this scene and the next scene, are they really two separate things? Is this one of the scenes just didn't need to be its own scene? The information that needed to come across, I think, and I'm still working on it, but I can get that information across in another different scene, combining with the next one. So, I'm on chapter 14, and chapter 15 right now is the midpoint. And I think even with the removing a scene, currently there's still 29 chapters in the book, which is unusual for me to know ahead of time. But in this new plotting system, not really a new plotting system, but using the plotter software that I mentioned a few weeks ago, it's very much in chapters. And so you can have multiple scenes per chapter, but the way that it sort of organizes is thinking about chapters, which I don't usually think about until later. I think about scenes. So I'm just, trying something new with that. But yeah, still going pretty well. This week, the challenges that I came in the writing were taking, the bare bones of the fast draft that I have that I did for NaNoWriMo and just the decision-making, the blocking came into effect because I had a scene where all five characters, so it's my heist team, is finally together in chapter 14, and they all have to sit down and plan the heist, right? That's like an important expected scene to have in this type of story. So you've got five people sitting around a table, blocking that. Whenever you have a lot of characters in a scene, it can be a little unwieldy. And so knowing who's sitting where, who's talking, how are the reactions, trying to think about it cinematically, what kind of shot do I have? And you have your, generally, in film school, you learn you have your wide shot, you establish everything, and then you kind of get closer and then you move in and out depending on emotion, relationships, content of what they're talking about, what you're trying to convey. So I do think about that when I write. I think about, walking into the room, what do you see? I'm in my main character's perspective. What does she see when she comes in? Where is everyone? And then she sits down and then it's still from her POV, but what are the movements and how do I keep everyone straight without too many dialogue tags? All of just the nitty gritty writing stuff comes into play. So and also that sort of micro level, you're working on the scene, you're working on making sure everything is clear and keeping the story threads together. And this was the first week where I started to feel like, am I holding on to these story threads? Because as you get to the middle of the book, generally things start to fall apart. You start to feel kind of like the puppet master has lost a little bit of the control, you know, to add another metaphor to it. The cart is starting to go off course. I don't know. But like, you're starting to get a little bit off track. Like I felt like I was really grounded up until this point, and it's not that bad yet. I think the midpoint scene is a scene that when I was writing it in the fast draft, I knew that it had gotten away from me and I was just trying to get past it. So this is the time when I have to settle down because it's going to be a beast. It's a big set piece. And if you're not familiar with set pieces, like it's another film term, but like those big scenes, like the big battle scenes that happen, or, you know, something in a movie where it's just one of the things that's in the trailer shots, usually, you know, it doesn't always have to be a battle. Obviously, it depends on the type of movie, but it could be just a big point of change that is happening. Your midpoint is a big turning point in whatever story you're writing. So it is one of my big set pieces, and I am scheduled to write that this week. And that's going to be another challenge. So it looks like I'm at 37,855 words. I'm doing really well with my about 5,000 words a week. That's comfortable. I get between 5,000 and 6,000 words a week. I think one week I got 7,000, but that was anomalous. So with the new project, it's hard to work on two things at a time, but I've done it before. And the good thing is that there are different stages. So deep into the revision of my fantasy heist, this one I'm starting the research for. And it's a different time period, it's a different location, one that I'm not familiar with. So it will be interesting. But I do feel like what I've been doing the past few months has really prepared me in a way to dive into something new. So kind of starting with a time period that I was familiar-ish with because I had written an alternate 1920s Second World fantasy story. So I had been doing a little bit of research on the 1920s all along the past few years as needed, and then changing it to be fantasy. But setting this story in the real world, doing actual research in a place that I'm very familiar with, Washington, D.C., was a kind of a good starting place for doing something new. And so now I'm taking those things that I've been learning and applying them to a new time period and a new place that I am not familiar with at all. So it is scary. And yeah, like, it's a good challenge, though. I accepted it because I thought it would be a good challenge. It would help me grow and it would help me learn. And now I just really need to level up these skills that I've been working on. So I've been thinking a lot about research and focused research. And because my plan is to spend the next 3 to 4 weeks researching and building the outline for the new story and then draft. And the project is going to be a book proposal. So I don't have to write the whole book immediately. I have to write enough to then sell it. And so, yeah, everything has to be focused and tight because I have a tighter timeline on it. But once again, it's like using those skills that I have and now really honing them. So I'm doing focused research. Like, I do tend to sprawl, and research can take you down rabbit holes where you're just luxuriating in it, kind of. I felt like I've done that. I've always tried to keep a handle on the time and not letting things run out of control because, you know, life moving on. But now it's like, okay, what is the least I need to know about this to do the same, like, good job? How can I just do as little as possible while still knowing what I need to know for the project? And so I think about sort of hacking all of the systems. The first thing is the research. How can I better organize my research? Like with this project, the Fantasy Heist, I knew I needed to have a handle on the research. So I've been using Scrivener and trying to just create sort of the story Bible in Scrivener and organize things, keep a record of my sources, try to do some sort of bibliography. It's not like an academic level one because I haven't had to do a real bibliography for 25 years. My graduate school, my thesis was a multimedia project. You know, I went to grad school for multimedia, so there was nothing really written down, and it was all just, we built a big installation, and it was sensors and video, and so it was a little bit of filmmaking, a little bit of, you know, computer art, a little bit of programming. It was a very interdisciplinary degree, and I don't have any experience in, like, academic research, but I downloaded this software called Zotero that I found out about that is used for research and for like creating a bibliography. It's basically just a way to organize your research, which is what I was looking for. And you can actually just paste in the ISBN of a book and it will fill all the information so that you can save that kind of bibliography. It will save web pages, PDFs. I'm still learning how to use it. I literally looked at it for half an hour yesterday and I was like, okay, I'm gonna come back to this. Because I would like to just keep better track of the research so I know where I'm getting things from. Because as much as I've been trying to do that in Scrivener, and it's still a little bit of a mess. Like, it's better than it's ever been before, but I feel like I can definitely level up. So that is one thing. And then I'm trying to figure out if I can use Zotero for, like, the actual note-taking as I'm in a book. I don't think that's going to work. It would be nice to have, like, a way to just have your bibliography and then the notes are directly attached. But, and there is a note-taking interface in the software, but it's not as portable. Like, I would like to be able to access it on my phone and on my computer and my laptop, and that's not really possible as far as I know. I also don't love the interface. It's just very small, and I'm a sort of an interface type of person, like a GUI, graphical user interface. I like things that are pretty and easy to use and well-designed, and it's just a little bit clunky. A lot of people use Evernote. I use Notion. I'm trying to move from Evernote to Notion, which is just another app for doing all kinds of things. And I don't love Notion for note-taking, though, because I don't want to go into it in too much detail because I probably don't care. But just that is, I could do it. I don't love that. So it's like, oh, what's the right tool to use? And I do get, that's where I get a little distracted. I'm trying to find the right tool. In some ways, Evernote for note-taking is actually better than Notion, just because of the way that it's designed. And Notion has these blocks. And yeah, okay, I said I wasn't going to go into it, and I won't. But yes, that's kind of a thing that's on my mind. Notebooks and three-ring binders, like anything that's physical, it does not work for me. I want it to be portable and digital and easily searchable. That's the main reason why I could never get into a story Bible that was just printed in a three-ring binder. That might work for some people and that's great, but I like to be able to search. The other day I was like, where was this? I knew I had a note about, oh, now I can't remember what it was, but something. And I couldn't, there was a phrase, there's a few words that I knew I had written. So I just searched Scrivener for those words and I found the thing. And I was like, you can't do that with a three-ring binder, right? I need to be able to search. So that is a task that I will have to do sort of in my spare time because I don't want to use the writing time to like develop a research organizational system. I am thinking of using Notion for a story Bible. So I generally use Scrivener for my story Bibles, and I even have a template that's on my website if you're interested. It's my actual just Scrivener template, so you can write in it and have the story Bible. But I might need to have a shared story Bible for this new project, and or at least one that other people can see. So Notion might be the best tool for that, and I'm going to investigate that a little bit for the new project. So new opportunities to sort of take what I've always been doing and level up, figure out ways to, like, different tools to use and things that might be necessary for the work to come. Adding on a new project also is going to make me have to really just dig down into my time management because that's going to be even more important. I'm going to have to go back to things like meal prep and simplifying other aspects of my life so that I can really organize the writing time, the work. I do have a big project at work that is also taking a lot of brain space, and that won't launch until March. So it's kind of a big site, and it's a lot of moving parts to the site. So I really have to just clarify things. And so, yeah, time management, whatever I need to do on that end. Because I slack off. Like, there's times when you're super busy and everything has to run really smoothly. And I have to schedule every hour of the day and make sure that I'm just walking downstairs, pulling out something from the fridge and eating it so I don't have to worry about cooking and even ordering. I do order a lot of DoorDash. Part of it is trying to support local businesses, but part of it is I don't want to cook and clean and wash dishes for the rest of my life. And, you know, cooking is better, but then you do have to clean up. So whatever little steps I can take in other areas of my life to reduce my workload and reduce the amount of decisions I have to make, the whole thing about decision fatigue is very real. And so even like ordering food, like where are we ordering from? What am I getting? I'm thinking about signing up for another one of those like meal services. I've done a couple in the past to varying degrees of success because I'm an extremely picky eater, but it's always good to try again. Other things I was thinking about were some of the little things that I say yes to that add up. You know, like a lot of times people are like, oh, do you want to do this thing? You want to speak here or do a post for here, an article for this? And I'll be like, okay, that's fine. When's it due? And then I put it on my calendar. You know, I put the due date, I put the start date, I put when I think I can do it, and I don't think about it again until my calendar pops up and like, oh, this is the week you said you were going to do this thing. Well, when that week pops up and you've forgotten about that thing, and then there's four other things that have happened, and then someone's website got hacked and you have to fix that, and then something else happened and someone calls you, and then you're like, oh, these five little things that weren't a big deal are now like, ah. And that's sort of where I found myself this week. So I've been a little bit frayed, and just for me, getting to this point is just like, okay, hunkering down and getting back into a system that I know works for capturing everything I need to do, scheduling it, and getting it done and checking it off the list. Sometimes I check things off the list too quickly and I miss things, sometimes when something, like there was a thing at work that was a little bit wonky and I had to start it and stop and like wait for someone else. And then by the time that happened, I had completely forgotten about it. So then I get this email like, did you do that thing? And I'm like, oh, I started it, but I didn't, it left my head. I also am invigorated by this and by the challenge of it all, even as it's a bit stressful. I've been thinking about instituting meeting days, which is something I feel like I've heard other people talk about where like, you know, when you get those emails like, well, when are you available for a meeting? And let's schedule something. And then you're like, well, this day from here to here and this day from here to here. And I do that because I want to give options for, especially if there's multiple people involved. And, you know, everyone's schedule is crazy, but it's also difficult. Like I protect my writing time as much as possible. Very rarely will I do a meeting in my writing time. Sometimes it happens, but other than that, you know, I'm pretty open. I'm here. I work from home. Like, I'm not going a whole lot of places. But having to break out of what you're doing for a scheduled meeting is also difficult. And so I've heard about people doing like, okay, my meeting days are Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I will schedule all meetings between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I know that Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I have uninterrupted time blocks for doing everything else I need to do, and then the meetings are peppered in on those days. And I'm thinking of starting something like that, if at all possible. Like, that could be something cool. It could mean also that Tuesdays and Thursdays are just full of meetings, but switching gears can reduce your productivity, I think. Like, in the philosophy of deep work, which I do believe in, if I'm able to have a chunk of like four uninterrupted hours to, let's say, work on this website, it's better than an hour here, an hour there, an hour here, an hour there. Same thing with writing. Like, I protect the time from 8 till 10 or 11 when I am writing. And same goes for any other kind of work. Like, doing that deep work, that deep focus that's uninterrupted by anything, including meetings, is really helpful. So maybe I will try that. I'll just, you know, next time someone needs to schedule a meeting, it'll be like, okay, my meeting days are Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. till 5 or, you know, whatever. And we'll see how that goes. And it's interesting. I tried to work in like Pomodoros. So the Pomodoro technique is when you set a timer, you work for like 25 minutes, and then you take a 5-minute break, and you do that throughout the day. I write in sprints. So our writing time is always in 20-minute chunks, and then we regroup afterwards, and then we do another 20-minute sprint. I don't do that for other kinds of work. I don't do that for my website development. I don't find it helpful because for me, breaking for the 5-minute break, I never take the 5-minute break. Like, I'd rather just finish what I'm doing, do that whole entire deep work block. I don't know. I can't remember if deep work includes Pomodoros or not, or if it recommends that you rest. The only rest I do is I have a rest timer for my eyes. So every 20 minutes, I take 20 seconds and look 20 feet away. That's the 20-20-20 rule for eye strain. And then at the end of 4 20-minute cycles, it gives me a 1-minute rest, which I'm supposed to stand up and stretch and do things like that. I often don't do that. I do, you know, use my sit-stand desk. And I don't know if that's something that I want to change. Like, I feel like those deep work blocks where I'm completely in it, aside from resting my eyes or standing up and sitting down, work better for me for like programming work. And then in writing, having the break is probably a good idea because it doesn't bother me to take the break even in the middle of a sentence. You know, it's actually, who was it? Was it Ray Bradbury or someone like that? It was like, maybe it was Hemingway. I have no idea. I think of some white man. It was like, yeah, end your work before you're done. Like, stop before you run out of gas, before you've said everything you have to say, so you have some place to pick up the next day. And that can be cool, even if it's maybe not the next day, but do the 20-minute sprint, and then it ends. Usually I finish the sentence. Take that few-minute break, and then go back to it. And you still have gas in the tank. You still have a lot of juice, and you know what you're doing. Because when you finish and you come to a stopping point, it can be harder the next day to start. Like, some days I'm like, how does this chapter start? Where do I even begin? If I had the day before gone a little bit into it, then maybe I would have more gas to move forward. Pitch Wars is coming to an end. And so we've been working with our Pitch Wars mentor. I'm a co-mentor along with Denny S. Price. And our mentee is working on a fabulous paranormal romance. And getting ready for the showcase, which comes up in February. And that has been a really interesting process, working with a new writer. And some of it is about restraint. Like, there is so much to know. And when you're working on your first novel, like, I know she's written things before, but I don't think that she's ever gone this far into it, into the revision process and really completing it and trying to get something that's done and ready for some other people to read. And it's like, I've been studying writing for such a long time. And there's so much knowledge that you glean with the kind of the intense study. And part of mentoring, I think, is trying to figure out, okay, how much feedback to give, how much is going to be helpful and how much is going to be overwhelming. I've got all of these books on my bookshelf. I've taken workshops, classes, week-long workshops, since 2011, when I started. I was in critique groups and classes. I did classes every summer as a child, writing classes. Like, I've been learning about writing my entire life, but especially in the past 10 years, just really honing it. And so there's so much that you can comment on someone's writing who is newer. And it's like, I don't want to overwhelm my mentee and kill her spirit and make her feel like she's a bad writer, because she's not, but she's a newer writer and there's so much to learn, and you're going to be learning for the rest of your life. Like, you're never going to be done learning how to write if you're a writer, and whatever art you're in, I'm sure is the same way. Like, there's always room for improvement and there's always something to know. So you're looking at something and you're saying, okay, this is where you're at. Where can you be in the time allotted to us? Like, how far can you go, and how much can you learn, and how much is the right mix, you know, without making someone kind of recoil and be like, oh, I can't do this. This is too much. I'm always cognizant of that in sort of the mentorship relationships that I've done. Like, there's a million things I could tell you about this. Let me pick three. That's kind of how I go about it. Like, let me pick a few that will be high impact and hopefully not, you know, make you want to cry. Because feedback is tough. You know, these are things you work hard on and your heart is in it and part of yourself is in it. And I know with my stuff, there's always room for improvement. And even with everything that I go through to try to make it as good as possible, thinking through the whole Pitchwars experience and working with a new writer and just hoping that we're striking the right balance. And I'm really hoping that everything is successful and that she's getting everything she needs and wants out of the experience and that it's overall net positive. And some of that will be when we see how the agents respond, but that can't be the only metric, you know, like maybe no agent requests anything, you know, maybe that would be very disappointing for everyone. I'm sure her more than us, but us too, definitely. Like we believe in her and we believe in her story, but it's not a personal, like knowing that it's not like a personal thing. It's just, okay, keep working on it, keep trying and keep submitting, keep going forward. You're in control of what you put out of your manuscript and how hard you work on it, how much you learn. But at every stage of your life, you're at different stages as a writer. And so I think my point is that I just hope that the experience is positive and overall not soul crushing. Like, you wouldn't believe how easy it is to crush an artist's spirit. I've heard from numerous people who've gone through MFA programs and then like didn't write for 10 years afterwards because they were crushed. And I know that certain kinds of feedback can do it. I felt it to different extents myself. And yeah, that just, it's just on my mind a lot. So here's hoping. So yes, my goals this week: continue working on the work in progress, continue researching the new thing, and listening to some audiobooks, and just trying to sink into that world and learn more about it. And keep on top of my time management skills and hone my system and work the system. Like, I know this organizational project management, time management system between my paper planner and my calendar and then my project management system, like, it's a good system. I'm really happy with it. I just have to follow it and actually do what it tells me to do and not sort of at 2 o'clock be like, I know I've got a few more hours left. I've got a few more things on my to-do list, but I'm exhausted. Although I've been following the Knapp Ministry, which is an online account, which is all about rest and sort of combating the Western idea of productivity and encouraging rest. There was also a really good interview that Sarah Wendell had on Smart Bitches podcast with an author talking about rest. So it's episode 440, Laziness Does Not Exist with Dr. Devin Price. I will link to that because I found it extremely helpful. So you're seeing more in the culture coming up in opposition of this idea of relentless work. I remember listening to podcasts about self-publishing where they were like, you can sleep when you're dead, sleep is for the weak. And you hear that in all forms of like these business mantras. And I was like, no, I need to sleep to work. Sleep's important. Sleep rejuvenates you and enhances your creativity. Like, I need to work hard and I also need to rest hard. And that is going to be a challenge, figuring out that balance, allowing myself to rest and also be really productive. But like I said before, you can't do all the things. So I want to do my best not to set myself up for failure at the same time. So yes, that's also part of the goals for this week. Like, work hard and rest equally hard. Get more sleep while doing more work. And that sounds like an impossible thing. So I'll let you know how it works out next week. In the meantime, I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you the next time. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.